Well, one of the things about Joy Community Fellowship, I hope you get, is we tackle the big questions of life, don't we? And probably no bigger question in life than the one I'm about to tell you about. It's actually a question of life that I was reminded of. I was online on an online forum a couple weeks ago, and somebody posed this question. I said, yes, I've dealt with that. And here was their question. They had a recycling bin, and they bought a new one, and they wanted to get rid of their old recycling bin. And they said, I put it out every week, and they keep leaving it. And the big question of life, how do you get rid of a trash can? Have you ever wondered how you get rid of a trash? It's something I dealt with as a kid. Growing up, we grew up right here in Haddon Heights, right on Kings Highway, and we had a driveway that was really long. And it was my job to take out the trash every week. And this is way back in the olden days where we had the metal trash cans, you know, and so you'd have to drag them out. And we had this old trash, one of our trash cans. It was a piece of work. It had no lid. It had no handles that, you know, those flimsy handles fell off. So you're having to like stick your hand in the trash can and drag it out every week. And I was just like, I am so sick of this trash. And I was miserable. And my dad knew I was miserable. And one day, you know, he came home with one of those brand new plastic trash cans. And I was, oh, finally, a new trash can. I can get rid of this old one. It'll make my life so much easier. So the trash night came around. I'm taking out the trash cans. I took out all the trash cans. And then I had the one nasty one, and I kept it empty. And I said, I'm going to throw this out this week. I put it upside down so they would know nothing's in it, you know. And then the next day when I was coming home from school, I come walking down the street. I see all the trash cans there, even the nasty. And I'm like, I know what I'll do. Next week, I'm going to make a note. And I put a note on this can, and it said, trash, please throw away. And I'm like, cool. So I came back from school the next day, and the trash can's still there. And I'm like, and then I started to think of these trash men. They're probably looking at it and going, oh, look, they labeled their trash cans. That was nice. So I'm like, how do I get rid of this thing? So then I said, I know. So the next week, I put out the trash and I brought that can out and I stepped on it and I crushed it. You know, the top of it, so it kind of bent in. So I can say, now they know this is messed up. It's laying on the ground. They're going to know to take it. I come home the next day and all the trash cans are out there, even this one, but it's standing upright and the dents are taken out of it. And I'm like, who are these guys? I mean, now they're fixing my trash cans for it. They probably thought, oh, they got messed up. Let's fix it. And I'm just like, what am I going to do with this? So I finally gave in. I just said, I'm just going to keep using it till it dies. And then it's so far gone, they can't possibly know. So I remember it didn't have a lid. So eventually the bottom rusts out of it. And I found that out one night in the hard way. I'm dragging it down our driveway and all the trash is coming out. The bottom, I'm just like, now they're going to see that this is finally gone. So I left it out there on its side. It's got a hole in the bottom. You know, obviously you can tell this is a piece of trash. The next day I come home and guess what? They took the trash can and put it inside the plastic trash can, kind of as a liner. I started thinking, how do you throw out a trash can? You know, almost 20 years later, my parents finally sell their house and they move. And I remember we went over to help them move. And I was taking some trash out back. And I come around the back corner of the house. And you know what's still out with the rest of the trash cans? That stinking trash can. Because I found no matter what you do, you can't throw out a trash can. And as I started thinking about that, I said, you know, this is kind of a truth in life. But it applies to other areas of life. In fact, it can apply to living as a follower of Jesus today. I mean, if you've been paying any kind of attention to what's going on in the news and things like that lately, our world is getting very antagonistic towards God and those who follow Jesus. You see things with abortion, it's getting brazen, it's just getting nasty. It has nothing to do with science or anything like this anymore. It's attack. And you see attacks on free speech and things like that, attacks on people praying in public, and all these kinds of things, and over again, trying to silence God and his people in society. Yet, in the midst of all of this, you know what? God is still working. God won't be silenced. And his people will be here for him. People, despite everything going on, people are still coming to faith in Jesus. Still seeing that something in their life is missing and it's only found in him. when catastrophes hit, even those people that say, no, how can you pray to a God? They're on there saying, make sure we're praying. You know, we lift our prayers up. And they're talking about that. And no matter how much God gets, people try to silence God and his followers, people still look to him. You see, you can't silence God. You can't take God out of things. Just like you can't throw out a trash can. And the reason you can't silence God is because he is still working. And yet, for us as followers of Jesus, I don't know about you, but when things happen personal to us in life, we can look at everything on the news and say, yeah, we'll still keep faithful. Then stuff starts to happen to us, right? Maybe it's attacks at work. Maybe we lose a job, or we have an illness come to us, or you know, we have experienced a loss or a broken relationship, and we're starting saying, this isn't fair. And it becomes hard to keep trusting in God, isn't it? Man, God's abandoned us. I just got done reading through Job in my devotions, and that's what all his buddies, God's abandoned you. And Job even feels, God, turn his back. How could this happen? And sometimes we want to lose heart. We want to lose that trust that God is with us. Yet, you know what? In the midst of anything we face, we can keep faithful. We can keep clinging to Jesus, led by this truth that God is always working. And you know, this is what we find today as we return to Genesis. We're in Genesis 37 this morning. So if you want to turn to Genesis 37, I think it's page 31 in the Bible in front of you, maybe somewhere around there. But last week we started looking at the life of a guy named Joseph, the son of Jacob. And as we started chapter 37 last week, we got introduced to Joseph, right? 17-year-old young boy who is the 11th of 12 sons of Jacob. Yet, by far, he's the favorite. He's the favorite son of Jacob. And the reason he's the favorite son of Jacob is because he's the oldest son of his most beloved wife, Rachel, who's now gone. So as the favorite son, man, Jacob spoils Joseph. He even gives him a coat of many colors. But what happens is the brothers notice this. They realize he's the favorite, not us. He's getting spoiled over us. And they start getting jealous. Well, on top of this with Jacob, God starts giving Jacob dreams. And in these dreams, basically what these dreams are saying, that one day, all the brothers are going to bow down to Joseph. And Joseph's going to be the one exalted over that. And now this jealousy grows into outright hatred of Joseph. And this is where we pick up today. So the brothers, that they hate Joseph now. And what we're going to find today is just as jealousy grows to hatred, today we'll see how hatred grows to conspiracy, which then grows into murder. You see, because sin unchecked always grows. Yet, in the midst of all of this, Joseph ends up right where God wants him. Right where God wants him to be. Do you know why? Because in the midst of all that life throws at God's people, he is always working. So, let's pick up in verse 12. And I'll just kind of go through, talk about the story, and we'll stop along the way and read some of the verses. But basically what's happening here is they're in the setting. All of Joseph's brothers are shepherds, and they end up going far north of where they are in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. They go a several days' journey north to the land of Shechem. And the reason why they're going north is it's mountainous, and in the summertime, that's where the good grazing was. So they head up north. But they're in the region of Shechem. Do you remember anything about Shechem? When we were talking about Jacob, this is where Jacob went, remember, and one of his daughters, Dinah, got raped by the king's son of Shechem. And Levi and Simeon deceived the people of Shechem and end up murdering all the men in town and pillaging the city. So this isn't a place probably that's real well liked by them, where they're real well liked, but yet they go up there. because they're sitting here, we're dominate over you. So they. But another interesting fact about this is, truth about this is also a place where they're far away from their father's influence. And when you're far away from your father's influence, you can run wild. You can do whatever you want. It's kind of like us in our lives. The further we get from God, the more we're drawn to sin. So his brothers are far away from the father. So Jacob says to Joseph, hey, I want you to go up and check on them. Bring me a report back of what's going on up in Shechem. Now, this is a dangerous journey for Joseph to have to take by himself and wonder why Jacob's sending him, but he sends him. And Joseph, being the good son, he says, I'll go. So he goes, and he heads several days' journey up to Shechem. And he gets up around Shechem, and he doesn't see his brothers. He's in the fields around Shechem, doesn't see his brothers, but he sees this guy, and he says, hey, I'm looking for my brothers. He says, oh, your brothers? They went further north, another 15 miles, another day's journey to a place called Dothan, which is even further north and more remote. So Jacob starts to head up to this place, Dothan, to see his brothers. And this is where we pick up in verse 18. It says, they, his brothers, saw Joseph coming from afar. And before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. So again, this hatred grows into now a conspiracy, and they said, let's get together and make a plan, and we're going to kill him because we're sick of him. Sick of how he gets all the attention, and we're sick of these dreams he's having. But notice something else in what they're saying. Basically, at the end of verse 20, they say, we'll see what becomes of his dream. Do you know what, in their brazenness, in their sin, they actually think if they kill Joseph, then what he dreamed won't happen. Or they'll change God's will. And they say, so this is how we're going to do this, so we won't have to bow to anybody. So we'll just take him out. Anyway, so they're making these plans to kill him. But one of the brothers, Reuben, the oldest brother, maybe he feels a sense of responsibility or something, he grabs Joseph from them. And he says, no, let's not do that. You know, let's not personally kill him. Let's just throw him in one of the pits, and we'll just leave him to die in one of these pits. Now, what these pits were that they're talking about, they're actually cisterns. Not wells, but it's where they would keep water. And what they would do, they were fairly deep, and they would line these wells or these cisterns with bricks or limestone, almost like concrete, so they'd be smooth because they wouldn't want the water that gathers in it to seep into the earth. So they would be lined with this, so they'd be real slick, so you couldn't climb out of them. So it's a perfect place to put them. They were just going to leave them there to die. But what Reuben didn't tell his brothers was that his plan was then later that day to sneak back when they're not around and rescue Joseph and pretty much just say, take off. We never want to see you again, but take off, and at least his life is saved. So that's Reuben's plan. So anyway, this is what they do. Verse 23. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, his coat of many colors that he wore. And they took him, and they cast him into the pit. So they threw him down into this pit. Basically left him to die. So picture this. Joseph's down in this pit. He's probably all bloody from the fall and everything. And he's calling out, help, help, somebody help me. You want to see how cold his brothers are? Look what it says at the beginning of 25. And his brothers, they sat down to eat. All right, let's eat. Not, oh, we just did something pretty major. Let's distance ourselves. No, they're just going to sit down and they're going to take care of themselves. Anyway, while they're eating, they notice that they're near a trade route. And these trade merchants are coming from the north down towards and basically heading to Egypt to trade. And as they notice that, one of the other brothers gets another great idea. Brother's name is Judah. And he says, wait. You know what? We can still get rid of Joseph, and basically we'll never see him again. But there's a way that we can make out in this too. We can profit. Let's sell him to one of these caravans, and they'll go and make him a slave. And then the money we sell him for, we get some money, and you know, we make out pretty well. So the brothers are like, okay, that sounds good. So he convinces them. And they sell Joseph for 20 pieces of silver. Now, for some reason, Reuben isn't here when all this happens. And later he goes back and he goes down to look in the pit, doesn't see Joseph there. So he's distraught. He doesn't know what happens. And he comes back to the brothers, like, I can't believe Joseph's not there. And he's worried. But then his brothers kind of tell him what happens. And they bring him back down into the pit with them, into sin, because they bring him into their next part of their scheme to make this work, or their conspiracy. Here's what they did, verse 31. Then they took Joseph's robe, and they slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. So it made it look like, you know, it was his blood on it. Then they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father. And they said, this we have found. Please identify whether it's your son's robe or not. So basically they have this plan to make it look like he got eaten by animals, but they're not going to tell a lie per se. They're just not going to tell the whole truth. They're just going to say, we found this robe, and let Jacob make the conclusion. But look at what else they say. You want to think bad things happen? They go to Jacob and they say, identify this as your son's robe. Not identify this as our brother's. They've already written him off as a brother. So they go to say to Jacob, is this your son's? He's not our brother, not family with us. And Jacob then makes the assumption, man, he got eaten by animals. They've torn him apart. He's gone. And he is inconsolable when Jacob sees this. Again, it's his favorite son of his favorite wife. And Rachel's already has died, so he doesn't have Rachel. Now he doesn't have Joseph, the one that he's poured everything into. So just imagine this pain and this loss that he's experiencing and how horrible it is, all as a result of unchecked sin. But it's interesting because the chapter doesn't end here. It doesn't end with Jacob's sorrow. It ends with something else. Look at verse 36. Meanwhile, while this is going on, the Midianites, those trading caravans, had sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of a guard. So Joseph isn't dead and gone. He's not forgotten. In fact, the very place his brothers will come looking for life-saving food during a famine that's about to hit years later is where Joseph is. And Joseph just isn't sold to anybody. He's sold to a guy named Potiphar, who's the head of the guards, the personal bodyguards of Pharaoh. So he's in this important home in Egypt as a servant. You know, despite the brothers' evil intents and their sin against Joseph, God was still working. And Joseph was right where God wanted him to be, primed to save his people. In fact, leaping from this, we leap forward to when Joseph finally talks to his brother, reveals himself to his brother, that it's him who just saved them in the famine, where he says years later in Genesis 50, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. Isn't that cool? You see, despite what we may think when we face attacks, when we face trials and struggles in our life, just as with Joseph, God is always working. In fact, it's why Paul echoed this Genesis 50 verse when he's talking to believers in Rome. And he says, and we know that for those who love God, those who follow him, keep trusting him, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to his purpose. Or basically, for those who follow God, God's going to work his purposes. No matter what. So, as we look at this story, to bring it back together, how do we, if God is still working, how do we keep trusting in God and trust that he's working when we're in the midst of things we're facing? Trials we may face today, because it's difficult, isn't it? When we're facing things, when we're in that pit, like Joseph was in the pit, when our kids go and they're doing their own thing and we can't seem to bring them back, or when something in our job just goes haywire and we can't control it, or we face these unprovoked attacks from people and we're just like, what did I do? And we start saying, this is done. You know, and a lot of times we get consumed with what's happening to us. Well, how can we in the midst of this be able to say, wait, God's still working. I'm going to stick with him and not get consumed. So how do we cling to God in that? Here's how we do it. We recognize the greatest threats to us trusting God. The greatest threats that come. See, because when we realize those stumbling blocks that we have that will keep us from trusting God or take our focus off of trusting God, then when we're in them, we can say, wait, this is one of those things. So all the more I need to trust God. And what we find in our passage today are these areas of life, these stumbling blocks. And, or basically, these trials that test our trust that God is always working. In fact, one of the areas we see in this story of Joseph today with his brothers and how awful they are, and one of these areas where our trust is tested and we can doubt that God is working, is when we face hardship rather than ease. You know, it's easy to trust God when things are going great, isn't it? It's easy to say, yeah, God is good all the time, God is good. And we say all that, and we're like, yeah, of course he is. But what about when we're facing hardship? You see, with Joseph, up until this point, he didn't have hardship. Yeah, his brother said some mean things to him because they didn't like him, but his life was pretty good. I mean, he had a father that loved him and that spoiled him rotten. He didn't have to work as hard as his brothers did. He got a nice new coat. And life was pretty easy. He had everything taken care of. He didn't really have much to worry about with life. Life as the favored son of promise, it was awesome. And then hardship came. You know, I think sometimes we sometimes think that's what it means to follow Jesus in our world today. I'm going to follow God and my life is going to be so different and I'm never going to face any troubles again. Right? I mean, Jesus won the victory, didn't he? He paid for our sin on the cross and he conquered death so that we can have victory. As Paul says, you know, we're more than conquerors. Yes, and everything is going to go great. I'm not going to face anything. What? How long did it take you? I think, I know for me, for that notion to come crashing down. To say, oh, wait a minute. No, just because I'm following Jesus doesn't mean I'm not facing troubles. I'm not facing hardship. Doesn't take long, does it? We soon realize, yeah, even though we're freed from sin. We still fail. Even though we know the way and are following the way, the truth, the life, we have the answers. People don't necessarily want to hear it. In fact, they don't want to hear it so much that they'll attack us for it. Don't you understand? I'm doing exactly what you want me to do, God. Why isn't this working? The truth is that as followers of Jesus, we're going to face opposition. We're going to face hardship. Do you know why? Because we live in a sinful world. We live in a world where sin still exists. And a world where there are many lost without Jesus. That want to keep running from him. So anything that reminds them of Jesus, they want to attack. We live in a sinful world, so we get sick, right? We face things that aren't fair. We go through trials and troubles. Sometimes we step out in faith only to fall down the stairs as we walk out. Basically, the times when we're following Jesus, it can be hard. Yet it's in these times, especially when they're hard, that we need to remember that God is always working. In fact, in these hardships and trials, it's in these that God can most be seen in us, that Jesus is shown to the world around us when we're going through these hardships but keeping faithful. Paul said it like this in 2 Corinthians. He says, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show the surpassing power belongs to God and not us. You know what he's doing? He's calling trials and hardships treasure. Because he says they're opportunities. And then he goes on and he says, so we're afflicted in every way, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not driven to despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. Always, sounds like a trash can, doesn't it? Always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus, the life that he brings, may also be manifested or seen in us, in our bodies. Life isn't always easy, but it's in these times especially we need to cling to God, knowing that he is always working. And we see this in Joseph. And even as his life now, it was easy up to this point, but now he's facing these hardships, God's still working. But it can still be a struggle then to keep faithful, especially when then we can't see God working. We can say God is working, but we don't see any evidence of it. And this is where Joseph is. I mean, despite his brother's evil intention, in the midst of all your suffering, I mean, you really can't blame Joseph, right, for looking at what the situation he's in instead of seeing all the ways that God is working. And God's working all through this passage. And it's sometimes like that for us, isn't it? We're in a situation and we're following God, but then, you know, we lose a job or we face financial struggle or a relationship breaks. And what's our focus on? I can't believe this happened. It's the worst thing ever. I got to focus on this and fix it. And we're not thinking, well, what is God doing? We're just saying, we're looking at our problem. We're at our trial. And we can't see God working. And when we can't see God working, it's all the more we got to cling to him. Look how God's working all through this story of Joseph. And in all of this awfulness that's happening, first we see God working through Reuben. The brothers just want to kill him. But yet God uses Reuben to say, let's not kill him. Then they leave him in a pit. Now it's interesting about this pit because at the end of verse 24, look back at verse 24. It talks that they threw him in this pit, but it says the pit was empty. There was no water in it. Remember, these are water cisterns. They're filled with water. If they were thrown Joseph in that water cistern, he would have drowned because there's nothing to hold on to. Okay? Tread water for just so long. But then eventually he's going to drown. But not this pit. This particular pit was empty. So even though he was thrown in, he survives. And then, even though his brother wants to profit off of it, God still uses him, Judah. And instead of just leaving him to die in the pit, they end up selling him as a slave, which, you know what that means? He's still alive. He's still kicking. God is still working. In fact, so much that these traitors then take him right where God wanted him all along, right where God wanted to put him. Isn't that amazing? That despite everything we go through, God can still put us exactly where he wants us to be. And often we don't see it. I doubt Joseph said, oh, I should be in Egypt here. He didn't know that till years later. And then he says, now I know why I was in Egypt. That was pretty cool, God. But we can't always see God working. And although everything that Joseph went through, you know, God didn't cause this. God can't be blamed for this. Oh, God was awful to Joseph. No, but God worked through his brother's sin. Even through their sin, God was working to work his will there. Isn't that cool? Just think about that with trials that we face, that God can still work through them. And he's working through that. The truth is, God is working his will in and through our circumstances as well, even when we can't see him work. So it may mean that we're facing a sickness and we're saying, man, this is the worst. But God's working to bring us to someone who needs to hear about Jesus that we would only meet because of that. He may have us in a job and we may say, I don't like this job, but it's so that he can preserve us for a financial need we might have in the future. And that's why he gave us this. It may mean that we go through a situation, we're like, why did I go through this? And then it's not till years later that we meet somebody who's going through the same thing we just went, and now we can walk with them through it. Oh, God was working. You see, it's often in these places when it's hardest to see God working or believe that he's working, that he's doing the most work. We need to trust that God is always working. And even though as Joseph's going through this and he can't see him working, and we can trust him, you know, we're still going to find ourselves like Joseph, far from what we know and far from what we're used to, as now Joseph's in Egypt. Yet, you know, this is a trial that comes our way. Yet, we can trust that God is working even when we're taken out of our comfort zone. Here, Joseph is ripped from everything he knows and put into this foreign country that hates the Hebrews. Okay, and he's as a slave there. He's not as a honored son. He's a slave. Everything he's used to, everything he's comfortable with, he's ripped from. Yet God did that. And in God doing that, he actually shows his grace to Joseph. Do you know how he shows his grace to Joseph? Because in bringing him out of where he was and into Egypt, he's preparing Joseph for something. You see, he took him away from his brothers, who were a horrible influence on him. So he removed that bad influence by removing Joseph from it. But you know what? He also removed him from his father, who Joseph was depending on, and found everything through his father. Now he has nobody to depend on but who? But God. So by taking Joseph out of his comfort zone, he's forced to depend on God, and he grows. And that's what God does with us when he takes us out of our comfort zone. And sometimes we're ripped from our comfort zone, from that which we might be familiar with or comfortable doing. It could be financially, it could be job transition, it could be having to move on somewhere where we didn't think we would go. And sometimes we're serving somewhere where we said, oh, I didn't know it would include this. I don't know if I'm capable. And we're out of our comfort zone. But you know, it's where here, when we're there, that God often does the most work in us, because we have nothing to do but cling to him. So when you're outside your comfort zone, remind yourself, hey, I'm outside my comfort zone, so now I can cling to God, because I know that here God is working. Just as he was with Joseph, bringing him where he needed to be. You know, I'm sure we can all agree, and I'm sure as you're sitting here this morning, we can agree following Jesus in our world today isn't always easy. It's not always comfortable. It's not always going to be problem-free or trial-free. In fact, following Jesus today is pretty messy. Because we live in a world where there's many laws without Jesus, we're going to face opposition. Because we live in a world where there's sin, we're going to face failure. We're going to face the effects of sin on us, even. Loss and sorrow and getting attacked, some of those things. And all of these trials are going to tempt us to lose faith. Just as they tempted Joseph to lose faith. Yet in the midst of all of this that we face, God is always working. Just as he was working in the life of Joseph, as he was coming to meet his brothers. He had no idea he was walking into some of God's greatest work. Because we look at it and we say, wow, what a mess. Yet God was taking that situation and placing Joseph right where he needed him to be. And that's what happens with us when we cling to him. Is that we see that God's working. He's working to shape us to better follow him. He's working to grow our faith, and he's working to use us to bring others to Jesus. Because it's when we're facing trials and we're clinging to Jesus, people don't see us, but they see Jesus in us. So in facing our world today, keep faithful, keep clinging, because God is working. Let's pray.